Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, welcome, welcome on this lovely Sunday morning with myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548. And today we're broadcasting live from the Mall of Africa in Johannesburg in Midrand, broadcasting live from the Center Court. We came in here. There is a small little travel exhibition that is going on here. So we are broadcasting live from here, alhamdulillah. And what an atmosphere. We're having all the people coming in to the mall this morning. They will be coming through. Well, at the moment, it's a bit quiet here. As I can see, people are still preparing themselves to come through to the mall. So if you are coming, visit the food court in the center court. They have Tourism Malaysia, which is here. We have Singapore Airlines. We have a few travel operators here, tour operators also. You can come visit them and just have a chat with them and see what interests you. But we are going to be talking to Tourism Malaysia and Singapore Airlines together later in the program. But first of all, as we know, we're talking about Africa for this year. As we mentioned in the beginning of the year, we're going to be talking a bit of Africa for the next 3 weeks. So last week we had a good discussion and a good topic on, we spoke about Botswana, and we're supposed to have the ambassador of Tanzania who's where to fly out. So they couldn't come in today, alhamdulillah, unfortunately. But we're going to be talking Zambia today, inshallah. So let's try and cover the southern part of Africa, where there's lots of interest that's being shown because of all the adventures that are available in southern Africa. So that will be great, inshallah. We are going to be talking of that. But more so, we spoke about Botswana last week, and we had a very good response. There were so many people that responded regarding their fishing trips, regarding general touring, going up right up to the north of Botswana, and also the safety aspect. I received quite a few messages regarding safety in Botswana, and I was taken aback myself that people find themselves to be very, very safe there. So, you know, it makes a difference. And people want to go up to places like that, where they find that there is safety. They want to go to places like that. So, alhamdulillah, we should look at, as South Africans in the first place, you know, we have that notion of watch your back all the time. And, you know, it is sometimes difficult for us as locals when we travel abroad. We become paranoid. I would say paranoid, that you can go to the most safest place. But we worried of our, we focus on our safety, which is fair, which is great, which is okay. But we have become like that. We've streamlined ourselves to become like that. But Allah knows best. You know, we got to take care. So whatever wants to happen will happen. All you do is you just make dua that Allah save us from any of these calamities. Alhamdulillah, Allah make it easy for us all. And I've had. Yesterday I received a message from somebody which I had mentioned before. I had a problem with, well, not a problem, I changed my phones. I had one old phone which I was running with the SMS line. I changed my phones, and unfortunately I couldn't get all those messages across on the other side. And I mentioned that I lost those messages because there was a slight problem on that phone even. And if anybody or whoever sent me messages, please could you resend them to me again so I could respond to some of the messages and the mails, which I had my emails on the same phone, on the Globetrotting email address. And it was quite a few responded to that, and I replied to those messages. One in particular, unfortunately, didn't probably hear the message and gave me appeal yesterday. But you know what, please forgive me for that. I try and respond 90%, 99% of the time. I try and respond to all your messages and give you the information that's required as far as I can, like I always say, as far as I can. There may be certain destinations that I find it a bit difficult, but we try our best to pass on information. And if I can't do it myself, I would get somebody else to probably assist and you know, help you with some of the information that is required. But be that as it may, Allah knows best. We try our best in trying to assist as far as possible. And alhamdulillah, we've succeeded in that. Shukran alhamdulillah. Like I say, if I have one person per program, or one person per month also, or one person whenever it is, just to do something good which we try to impart from this program, I think I'm satisfied. Like always, our SMS line 072-786-5520, 072-786-5520. My email address, that's Mohammed, M-O-H-A-M-E-D, at globetrotting.co.za. As I said, we're broadcasting live from the Mall of Africa, the center of the food court. And everybody's starting to open up here now. As we can see, people are starting to get in and starting to open up and get things going here. And if you find any background sounds and so on, please bear with us. Like I say, it's a live broadcast from an outside venue. Now, in particular today, we want to talk about Zambia. Zambia being very, very interesting. We have the southern tip of Africa, which is Cape Town. Then we have Durban. Then we have Johannesburg. On the left, we've got Windhoek. Then we have Zimbabwe. And further up, then you have, above Zimbabwe, you obviously have Zambia. Now, Zimbabwe and Zambia share the same border. And having Zimbabwe, Zambia sharing the same border, you have the Vic Falls, first of all. Now, when you talk Zambia with many people, that comes first from them. That you're talking of the Vic Falls. You're talking of that particular excellent, excellent waterfalls, which is on the African continent, which is a stone's throw for us. And the hills that's wrapped in dense emerald wood, humming with bird and insect songs, a sparkling expanse of sapphire lakes with golden beaches, abundant waterfalls fed by rushing rivers, vast national parks, where the lions roam free across the sea of tawny grass, the haunting cry of the fish eagle as it dives down to scoop up a luckless rainbow fish, and that is Zambia that we talk of. Endlessly absorbing and exciting, Zambia's raw edge will leave the independent traveler breathless, while luxurious lodges hidden away in a remote, hypnotic wilderness guarantee you a holiday of a lifetime. For the more well-heeled tourists, Zambia is a land of the fantastic and unexpected. And the more you explore this huge country, the more you realize how much one of Africa's undiscovered gems has to offer. Venture into the bush, which is Zambia is known for. You venture into the bush and you find a landscape of littered with reminders of the past, ancient rock paintings, burial sites, and small little villages, thatch roofed huts that have been in the same area since the Iron Age. And you'll find culture which really overtakes modern life, and that you'll find in all the villages. And I think from south right up north, you would definitely find that their culture is something that they keep close to their hearts. And African culture and African way of life is kept throughout the African continent. That is why when you do any tour, when you're going for any tour into Africa, it is advisable that you go and visit the cultural places. That makes a difference, because what happens is, when you go out there and you look at what they do, their culture, their lifestyle, their way of living, and the different, the different way of doing things, that is a holiday that you would love, that you have to do, I would say. Not that you just go out to a certain country, you go to the main city centers, you see what you see at home, basically, that's what I call it. You go out, you are out in another country. Explore the country the way they do it. Explore the country the way they enjoy the country, by their culture and with their culture. And that makes a difference. This is Africa of the old, and that's the Iron Age of the whole of Africa, where life has followed a similar pattern over the ages. Women pounding maize for the evening meal, with babies wrapped in multicolored chitenge cloth, which is slung on their backs, which you can picture as exactly as what I'm saying. And you'll have the small children herding cattle, men in dugout canoes, they fishing on the lakes there, and the wonderful ceremonies to mark the harvest, new moon, or the passage into adulthood. All this is part of their culture. And of course, the modern Zambia is creeping into even the remotest village, but it is in the cities where change is most evident. But when they go back to their villages and so on, you are sure to still get the culture. The culture will still remain the way they have to have it in their lives. And Lusaka is trying with some success to transform itself from a down-at-heel African capital into a glitzy metropolis. But it is the people who are the country's greatest treasure. With 73 different languages, Zambia is a rich cultural mosaic. Take a walk off the beaten track and you'll be rewarded with friendliness and curiosity. Although most visitors are drawn to the country by its natural beauty, their enduring memory is likely to be of the Zambian people and their way of life. Long after the memory of the country's wonderful sights have faded, even the most jaded traveler will remember the dignity, warmth, and hospitality of the Zambian people. Now you'll find all the different types of culture that they bring forward to you. They could, you know, obviously they had their colonial times with the British that came into Zambia, and they also had to live under colonial rule, but they still kept their culture. Zambia's human history stretches back many, many decades, and it is recorded in the country's many archaeological sites also. The oldest Stone Age sites in Zambia are near Livingstone, especially on the cliffs of the Batoka Gorge overlooking the Zambezi River. Zambia's most feted early inhabitants lived a couple of centuries ago and is known as Broken Hills Men, named after the mine near the town of Kabwe, where he was discovered in 1921. Between the 12th and the 18th centuries, the ancestors of today's Bantu-speaking tribes migrated to Zambia from the Lubalunda, that empire in the Democratic Republic of Congo, to form kingdoms alongside the older chiefdoms. From their bases of the east coast of Africa, Swahili and Arab traders pushed into the interior using the most obvious route of the Zambezi River, bartering salt and guns with the local Bantu people for gold, ivory, and slaves. Some Swahili are thought to have settled at the confluence of the Luangwa and the Zambezi rivers in the southeast of modern Zambia. Now you'll find Zambia being landlocked, Zambia being in the center, and with Zambia being landlocked, you have lakes, which have lovely, I would call them beaches also, but you have lovely lakes, you have fishing is in abundance. Lots of people from the southern part of Africa, South Africa, would go up for fishing. And that is also something which they'd love to do. Then you have Lusaka itself as a metropolitan city, which is a bustling city. Lots of people from outskirts have come into the cities and have now made it into a modern city. But like I say, at the end of the day, they still go back to their culture. They still go back to where they have to go. And it's amazing. And also, safety in Zambia. I've been to Lusaka myself, and safety in Zambia, beautiful. It's amazing. When you go there, you won't find these people just harming you in a hurry. You'll find the odd pickpockets around. Obviously, anywhere in the world you go, if you go to the remote parts of the city, you are at risk. Anywhere in the world, I would say. But in the metropole itself, it is safe. You have police presence all over. And as a foreigner that went there, and I've been driving around in Lusaka, those cops, as they see you also, they don't just hassle you in a hurry. Unlike we find in some of the other countries where they would have that problem. But we fortunately didn't have issues like that. Now, eager to cut down the running cost of the new colonies in 1889, Britain agreed to an offer made by diamond magnate Cecil Rhodes and handed over Zambia's administration to his British South Africa company, that is BSAC. The new colony, named in honor of Rhodes, was initially split into two regions, the northwestern and the northeastern Rhodesia, which in 1911 were merged as Northern Rhodesia. When it handed over the territory to the British Colonial Office on the 1st of April in 1924, the BSAC left in its wake an impoverished and underdeveloped country. The colonial government set aside blocks of land for the exclusive use of Europeans and encouraged European immigration into Africa and into that particular region. By 1930, thousands of Africans had been forced to move from prime land reserved for white settlers to less fertile land that quickly suffered degradation as a result of overcrowding And the, you know, it was just so difficult for them. So we have the same experience as what we had in South Africa, where we were pushed aside, and the locals were pushed aside, and the space was given to the colonial masters at the time. And we find that that exactly had happened in Zambia. And that's when that happened. But then Zambia obviously came out of it over the years. They experienced all that. And then we had the nationalist resistance to the federation that grew as became clear that the union was meant to protect the rights of whites to the detriment of Africans. And with young politician Kenneth Kaunda at the time emerging as one of the nationalist leaders, through the early 1960s, nationalists continued to oppose colonial rule through a campaign of civil disobedience. And that's where things changed. And I think that's what happened. And it happened all the time. And, you know, it's just... I think the whole of Africa suffered that fate. And in the 60s, things started changing. But more so, you are going into Zambia. Livingston is exceptionally beautiful. You have the Vic Falls at the border of the north of Zimbabwe and the south of Zambia. You have the Vic Falls. You have Livingston, the town called Livingston. There's quite a few hotels there. So you visit those hotels. You can visit the falls, which is at the moment, I think at the moment it's about the best. Beautiful. It's amazing. The pictures that are coming out from Vic Falls with the water that is now, I would say the rivers are flooding there. So you can imagine how beautiful that is. You can imagine the beauty of that waterfalls. And then you have the bungee jump, which is there. You have the white water rafting, which is just below in the gorges that are there. So if you are a sports junkie or an adrenaline junkie, that would be ideal. To travel from Zambia, to travel to Zambia from Johannesburg, you can go via Zimbabwe. You can also probably go via Botswana if you want to, but you can go via Zimbabwe. So from here, you go into Bulawayo. From there, you go right up to Harare. And from there, you go to Livingston. That would be an ideal route to take. And you get into Livingston, you can stay there. And if you want to, you can drive up from there, go up to Lusaka. It is a long journey. And then you have daily flights also, which are going directly into the Vic Falls area. Then you have flights going right up to Lusaka also. So you have that, and you know, it is just, it's amazing. Beautiful. So if you are looking into it, look into Zambia, southern part of Africa, local holiday, and have a great time. We are going to take a break shortly, but before that, we have a Nikah announcement of Mahmoud Rawat. And the Nikah is of Mahmoud Rawat to Nafisa Meter. That will take place at the Calvin Masjid after Zohar Salat. And Mahmoud Rawat is our very own Mahmoud Bhai Rawat at the studio. It's his auntie's son. So inshallah, there is a Nikah this morning that will take place in Calvin Masjid. It will be after Zohar at the Calvin Masjid. And it's Mahmoud Rawat to Nafisa Meter. Now, after the break, we are going to be talking to Singapore and Malaysia. We're going to talk Malaysia tourism again because we find it very interesting. Quite a few people, as I mentioned last week before last, there are so many queries coming for Thailand. We're getting queries for Malaysia. We're getting queries for Singapore also. Since Malaysia Airlines do not fly directly into Malaysia, there's lots of people that are flying Singapore Airlines, stop over probably a day or two, and go over into Malaysia from there. And while you're in Singapore, we are going to we'll hear from Tourism Malaysia about going to Legoland and from there going up further north. So we will do all that, but right after the break.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're listening to myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548, on the Globetrotting program. Alhamdulillah, and as I mentioned, we're broadcasting live from the Mall of Africa in Johannesburg, Midrand to be specific, where there is a small little exhibition of Tourism Malaysia together with Singapore Airlines. And we also have a few of the tour operators that are here. And it's just marketing Singapore and Malaysia. Now, like I mentioned also, we don't have Singapore Airlines. We don't have Malaysian Airlines flying directly to Malaysia. So we have Singapore Airlines. That is why Singapore Airlines have now, I would so call it, as merged with Tourism Malaysia. And they have now joined out to go out or to fly their packs out to Malaysia and via Singapore, so it benefits both the countries. Today we do have from Singapore, from Tourism Malaysia, we do have Tasnim, who has never been with us before on program which we had Tourism Malaysia in the studios previously. Tasnim is the very first time that she's joining us, and I hope she's giving us a broad smile. I hope she can really, really do a good job out of it. Assalamu alaikum, Taslim. Thank you very much for joining us on this lovely Sunday morning. And with this exhibition is taking place also, thank you very much for joining us here in the Mall of Africa.
Walaikum salam, Mohammed. And we are really excited to be here at the Mall of Africa. Like you said, we have the tour operator, Singapore Airlines is here. So we're just having a fabulous time meeting all the people, the locals that want to travel to Malaysia. It's excellent to be here right now. And I just want to enlighten you about Malaysia. For those of you who don't know, Malaysia is situated in the heart of Asia. It's located 2 to 7 degrees north of the equator. It has tropical climate and summer all year round, so you can easily escape the winters and go and enjoy the lovely sunset beaches in Malaysia. We have some of the popular islands in Malaysia, which include Pangkor Island, Penang Island, Langkawi Island, which is located along the west coast of Peninsula Malaysia, and is very popular to South African market. Across our South China Sea, we have two states, Sabah and Sarawak. And this is where you can experience adventure tourism, exploring the wildlife and nature trails. Malaysia is also a diving paradise destination, excellent marine life, and it has amazing coral and reefs. You can enjoy snorkeling as well as sea walking in Malaysia.
Now, this is just a brief of what you're telling us. There's so much to do in Malaysia. Now, as we know, lots of people, when you talk of Malaysia, from my experience over the last few years that I'm doing this program, when you talk Malaysia, people relate Kuala Lumpur only to Malaysia. Now, as we know, as what you're just telling us now, lots of people will say, "What? Where's that? And what are you talking about?" But that is all what Malaysia entails, not only Kuala Lumpur. And that's the way we should know it today. If you're talking of Sabah, Sarawak, and all those places are, I think, almost a no-go for many of our listeners, that they never knew about them. Then you have, there's so many other places, cities, towns, which you're talking of when it comes to the national parks and so on. When you're talking of all those places, there's so much to do in Malaysia. So, you know, besides the city center, as you briefed us with, but, and you're giving us a total brief. If you will elaborate with us also, we do have Brother Jamil that is here who will also elaborate on some of the places, because he's just come back from Malaysia also. So if he can just elaborate some more. But Tasneem, as you just mentioned, all these places that you're going on, tell us something about some of the national parks that we know of in Malaysia.
Okay, our oldest national park is 130 million years old. It is called the Taman Negara National Park. You can stay at the park or camp out, explore the jungle trails, river cruise, interact with the natives, because they demonstrate their hunting skills by means of a blowpipe. So that is very, very interesting. So, you know, we also have ecotourism as well. So there's basically a lot to see in Malaysia, because Malaysia is a fascinating destination. It's a Muslim country. We have 57% of Malays, Chinese, Indians, and various ethnic groups that live in Malaysia. So it's a very safe destination, and even for women, family, children, you can easily enjoy a fantastic holiday in Malaysia. We have theme parks, Legoland, which is what we are promoting right now in conjunction with Singapore Airlines, because it's very easy to get to Malaysia by Singapore Airlines from Johannesburg to Singapore. It's about 10 hours, and then it's just a quick 30 minutes road from Singapore into Johor Bahru, and Legoland is actually located in Lusajaya.
Now, as you mentioned, that in the national parks, you have those blowpipes where they target animals and they catch the animals with the blowpipes. Now, I can personally, last year when I went, I experienced that firsthand. In fact, we were given the opportunity to use those blowpipes. Although we saw all those people using the same mouthpiece and the blowpipes, unfortunately, we had to use the same, we had to do the same thing just to try it out. But they gave us a target board. And it was so amazing. The target board was something like about 15 meters away from where we stood. And they put in a little dart into the blowpipe, which is about 2.5 meters or 3 meters long. And that little dart that was inside, we had to target the bullseye on the target board and blow that blowpipe with that needle that was inside. I would call it a needle. And believe me, it was so easy. Animals in the jungle and in this national park also, but the national parks that you have there that I know of, are they not controlled by the government, where you're not allowed to hunt, or I think they do have certain hunting times which they allow some people to go out there?
Basically everything in Malaysia, if you're looking at the jungles, forest areas, marine life beaches, when you do diving, everything is regulated by the government. The amount of people are limited as well. No hunting is allowed, obviously, for for the growth of the species. And then if you look at, for example, the marine life as well, we also limit the amount of divers and snorkelers in our marine parks, our dive sites, just to keep the growth of the and the health of the marine species flourishing in that in those areas. So Malaysia is very, very strict when it comes to ecosystem rebuilding and things.
And it is very much controlled by the government, as you said. And having said that, people from around the world obviously go out and go visit those places because it is controlled, because it is so, so protected. I can remember when we went in, there was a place just out of Penang, coming south, further down south. There was a massive lake that we had to cross with a speedboat. And it's at the Thai border, if I'm not mistaken. That when we went in with a speedboat, we came up to the Thai border. It was on that lake. And we had to get permission from them and go further front. And there is a small little island, which is part of Malaysia also, where people live on that island. And being on that island, they just don't want to go back to the... or they don't want to go to the main cities. Government offered them to go to the main cities. They live on that small island on stilts. And there must have been about 100, 150 people on that island. Only on stilts. Primitive people, I would say.
Yeah, that's
right. And we met those people. And they fish there. They use those, what this name is talking of, those bow pipes and so on. And they live like that and they enjoyed it. And when we took sweets for them, it was like something different all the time, where they eating their fish and they eating their meat, and we took sweets for them. It was just amazing how those children
that's the way of life for those type of people. I mean, if you ask people living in our areas that, you know, we want to go into do something nature and everything, let's go for 2 weeks and keep them 3 days, and they'll start racking their brains like they want to go back to the city, they need Wi-Fi, blah blah blah. But for us, it's for them, it's something that, you know, nature is their territory. You can't put them into a city, they will not survive there. It's the same thing. You can't give them KFC and McDonald's and things like that. It's just not their type of thing. So, yeah.
Exactly. Now, that is now going more in the outskirts. Now we're talking of city center. You're talking of Penang. Now, lots of people, when they go to Malaysia, they go into Kuala Lumpur. From Kuala Lumpur, then they look at probably going to... they go to Phuket from there, which is in Thailand. Now, what about Penang and what about Langkawi and those areas?
Okay, so if you're looking at going from Kuala Lumpur, for example, to Penang, Langkawi, you can fly into Penang from Kuala Lumpur International Airport. Many airlines can fly you there. You can fly with AirAsia, it costs you about 250 rand, one way per person, including taxes. Fly into Penang, Penang is basically your food capital of Malaysia. Everything food-wise, you'll find there, culture as well, everything you'll find there. If you're looking at going to Langkawi from there, you can actually take a boat that stops halfway via Pulau Paya Island, which is a day trip. You can do snorkeling, diving, and then from there, you can in the evening, you can take the connecting boat that goes straight to Langkawi from there. Spend about 7 nights. You can go to... there's enough to do in Malaysia, in Langkawi itself. You've got the whole island. You've got eagle feeding, island hopping, river cruising, hiking. We even have mountain. It's got a cable car. It's about 800 meters high. On a clear day, you can see the Chai Islands in the north. So it's amazing. There's really a lot to do there. For those people that are avid golfers, we've got the Datai in Langkawi as well. It's a world-renowned golf resort. So amazing things. A lot to do in Langkawi itself.
I've got an SMS here on our SMS line 0727865520, 0727865520. The SMS reads here, is it advisable to go to Penang and Langkawi? I've got a 14-day holiday, which I'm going to Kuala Lumpur direct from Johannesburg. Is it advisable if you're doing Penang and Langkawi?
Like I said, you can fly to Langkawi, you can take a boat across, use that boat as a one-day stop over in Pulau Paya Island, do your snorkeling, diving, everything at one island, and then move across to Langkawi. Or you can fly to Langkawi from Penang as well. It's up to you. If you want to, you can actually use the train from Kuala Lumpur right up to the state of Kedah. From there, you can use a ferry to go across to Langkawi and then come down by boat into Penang. So there's a lot of options available. You've got buses, you've got trains, you've got flights, boats. And Malaysia's public transport system is amazing. Whether it's local in the city or national or even going through borders, it is amazing and very, very affordable to go anywhere.
Now, we have, that is your transport system within the cities. Now, going or driving up from Kuala Lumpur, or if we're talking, let's start from the bottom. We've got Singapore Airlines here also now today. Now, going with Singapore Airlines, you're flying into Singapore, or you come into Singapore City, and from Singapore, obviously, it borders, Malaysia borders Singapore. And from, I've been there, so where we see we have Legoland. To come from Kuala Lumpur down to Legoland is a journey, it's a flight, and it's long. But if you're going from Singapore City into Legoland, there's a bus ride which takes about 20-25 minutes to the border, and then from there, you're going into Legoland. Now, give us a brief on going to Legoland, because I think Malaysia is really, really marketing Legoland now.
Yeah, okay. If you're looking at the flight with Singapore Airlines, what there is you have there's a bus at the airport. It's seven Singapore dollars to get to Johor itself, and then from there you can that'll take you about 40 minutes actually from the airport. If you're looking from border crossings, it'll take you about 20 minutes. So once you get into Johor, there is a Legoland bus that travels from Johor Bahru City Centre, and that will cost you around 7 ringgits. So it's about $20 to get to Nusa Jaya district, where Legoland and Hello Kitty Town, Bob the Builder, all those theme parks are. It's all in the same area. So Legoland is basically your water park and theme park in south of Malaysia. It's also known as, that part of Asia is actually known as the Orlando of the East, because you've got Universal Studios in Singapore, you've got Legoland in Malaysia, you've got Angry Birds theme parks in Johor. You've got, like I said, the Putri Harbour Resort, which is Hello Kitty, Bob the Builder, and things like that. So all your family entertainment, theme parks, that is all there. So connectivity is very, very simple. You can either use a Legoland bus from the airport, Legoland bus from middle of town in Singapore, or you can go to Johor Bahru and split up your journey, and you can go across to Legoland from there, both having a small shopping sightseeing trip at the same time.
Now, Johor Bahru, if you're going from Singapore, Johor Bahru, is it a city on its own?
Yes, it's a totally different city all on its own. You'll notice a lot of Singaporeans there, because they love to go shopping there. You notice the Johor Premium Outlets, where you have all your world's famous branded goods. It's up to 65% off. That place is full of Singaporeans, and a lot of travellers from Singapore, they travel into Singapore, go there to do their shopping, because it's almost 3 to 4 times cheaper than in Singapore itself.
Exactly. I experienced it myself. When you come to the border also, you're standing in queues only with Singaporeans in the line wanting to go across. And when you see them also, you know, are you working across? No, I'm going for shopping. And it makes it so easy for them just to come, stamp across. I don't know if they've got cards or whatever, or do they have to stamp their passports? They have to stamp their passports.
Yes.
And they go across, do their shopping, and they're back again in the evening. So it becomes so easy. It's like one city. The way I look at it, Singapore and Johor Bahru area, that whole area is like one city.
Yeah, you know, it is all one city. If you look at the locals there, a few years ago there was a lot of rain and a few houses got flooded. But I heard from one of my friends that their friends, the first thing that he took from his house when he left, the only thing was his passport, because that was like his lifeline to get between the two countries. So he left everything else, and his passport was with him. He was happy.
That's what they look for, I think. Yes, exactly. Now, there's Malaysia and Singapore also. Now, in Singapore, you're looking at Sentosa Island, obviously, which is, like you said, it's the Orlando of the East. And you have Universal Studios, you have all those things. There's a lot to do there. So what that you have, your Legoland. But now we have Malaysia that offers a lot of festivals. You get all these shopping festivals. You have all the religious festivals, the festival of Eid, Diwali, all those things. And there's so many festivals, and they really, really look forward to these festivals. So, Taslim, can you just tell us more of all the festivals? And also, the fact that I know is, during their festivals, shopping becomes, I think, the most integral part of their promotion, because everything is like very, very cheap, I would say.
Yes, Mohammed. In fact, Malaysia is very rich in culture, and we celebrate many festivals throughout the year. For example, the Chinese New Year was a spectacular festival with the dragon dance and fireworks, so it was very exciting. And then we have some of the major upcoming festivals like the Hari Raya, Eid al-Fitri, Deepavali. We have Thai Pusam. That's during the Hindu festival where they actually celebrate in honor of Lord Muruga. And during this time, you find the Hindus taking the chariot up to the Batu Caves, which is 272 steps high, which is also very, exciting to actually be part of these kind of festivals. Our major festival for the year is the Chitra Varna Festival, which is the colors of Malaysia. Okay, over here it actually showcases the cultural diversity where the various dancers and musical performance from all over the states will gather at the Merdeka Square just to put together a spectacular performance for the public, and tourists are most welcome to be part of these festivals. So you don't have to pay an entry fee. You can come along and join us for the festivals and also, enjoy the festivals in Malaysia.
Now, with all these festivals we've seen, there's a it's a melting pot of culture. Malaysia do not as Islamic as it is, but they do have other cultures and they do respect all cultures across the board. If you're talking of the Hindu culture and the Hindu religion, which also they respect. They do have, as you said, the Batu Caves, which is, if you've been to Malaysia, if you've seen in pictures, Batu Caves is where there's a big gold statue. But the 272 steps are narrow steps, and you go right up to the top. It's just to go up to the top and come back, not to do the rituals or whatever it is, but go up to the steps and come down again. That in itself is a tour and I would say an amazing day out when you're going out in that area.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people been to Batu Caves and they've seen it. It's basically like your Virgin Active on steroids. Basically, you're running up those stairs. But what people don't realize is actually if you don't have to go right to the top. If you go halfway up, there is a channel to go through to the main caves. And there's no other religious connotations there on that trail. So basically, halfway up, you'll find a path to the side. You go through that path, and then you'll find the other cave system there as well. So you can do that as well. If you don't want to be involved in all that other stuff, you can just channel yourself to the side and go and see what else there is there, because it's not just that one cave there.
And they've got all the caves where they show you. It's like our South African caves that we have here. They've got a stalactite and malactite, or whatever they may call all those things. And they take you in for tours to go view all those things. They have thousands of bats which are there in the caves, and that is something amazing. Huh?
Yes, actually, that is one of the main things of Malaysia. Is if you're looking at caving, just to take you a bit off from Peninsula Malaysia itself, if you go to a place called Sarawak, the Mulu Cave, it's Mulu National Park. It's actually the world's biggest limestone cave by volume in the world. You can actually put 47 747s nose to tail inside there. It takes about 3 days to hike through the whole cave system. It is very big. It's got massive amounts of tunnels, fjords. It's got stalagmites, stalactites. We've got natural waterfalls in the caves as well. So there's quite a lot to see there just in the Mulu Caves itself. This is the limestone area of Borneo, actually. So it's called the Mulu National Park in Sarawak. North of that, obviously, you have Sabah, where we've got cave systems there as well. Not as big as Mulu Caves. But with Sabah as well, you've got everything from mountain climbing 4,100 meters high to diving down in Sipadan about up to 600 meters down below.
Now, talking of scuba diving and so on, that is beautiful, especially that side because the waters are very, very warm. Huh?
Yes, very, very warm, very clear. You've got visibility is up to 30 meters plus. The reason that the visibility is so high is because there's no reef floor, so there's no surge or anything. Basically, you're just diving a reef wall in Sipadan. So it's a reef wall, 600 meters. Obviously, you're not going to do 600 meters. You'll most probably go 30, 35 meters itself if you're a recreational advanced diver. And then from there, you've got a loggerhead turtle cave. In that loggerhead turtle cave, you've got loggerhead turtles that are around 2.2 meters big that swim with you around there. Obviously, this is also regulated by the Marine Ecological Research Center, where we limit the amount of divers in that area per day. The area is Mabul, Sipadan, Kapalai, the three islands. It is the world's best diving spot in situated in Sabah itself.
Now, that is what lots of people would go out to do, because when you're going out there, you obviously have your city tours, which you're looking at Kuala Lumpur. From there, you're looking at Putrajaya, which is also becoming an attraction to lots of people, and then you have the Blue Mosque, you have all those things. But then from there, people want also the holiday of relaxation, which I would call. And they look for these islands, and they look for all these outskirt places, water, and so on. And that is ideal, I think. I think Sabah Sarawak has not been mentioned to many, many, and thousands of people don't know about that.
And we should look into Sabah Sarawak also.
You know, Borneo is actually what we call an untouched paradise. We don't promote it a lot as well because, the government limits the amount of people that can go there. And so it's not commercialized at all. It's not like your Phuket and Langkawi in it where it's very full during peak seasons and that. But it is an amazing, if you do get the opportunity to go, I would definitely recommend spending the 2,000-3,000 rand extra, go and seeing something that you haven't seen before. Go to the Tuanku Abdul Rahman Marine Park. You can actually surf slide from one island to the next. You can walk across the reefs from one island to the next. So there's a lot to do there. And the variety of unique tourism products that we have in Sabah itself is amazing.
Now, just an SMS that's come in here, it's a twofold SMS. The one is, do you need vaccinations when you're going to Singapore, Malaysia?
No, you don't need vaccinations. We needed it before, about 4 years ago, but not anymore.
Not anymore. And then secondly, if you're staying in Kuala Lumpur for a few days, what sightseeing places are a must in Kuala Lumpur?
Okay, let me leave the thing to this. She's got all the sightseeing places.
Okay, we have lots of attractions in Kuala Lumpur. Well, first of all, it's the KL Towers, we have a revolving restaurant there, and you can actually enjoy a lovely dinner in Kuala Lumpur. We have attractions, places of worship. You can basically enjoy yourself in Selangor. We have the nightlife, and of course, Malaysia is all about the food. So we can talk more about the food as well, because wherever you go on vacation, you just want to enjoy good food, and it's easy to get halal food in Malaysia. For example, nasi lemak is what you can find in most places in Malaysia. It's a flaking rice served with hard-boiled eggs and anchovy. This Malaysians eat rice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So you find a lot of makan, which means food, in Malaysia.
The nasi kandas, I know they are in abundance. And nasi kanda is our kari kichiri and all that, what you will get. And I'm so certain when you go to one of those nasi kandas, you're going to get your kari kichiri that you so much want. And you'll pick that up in all those places. But more so, what about the shopping centers? Which are the popular shopping centers there?
Okay, in terms of shopping, Malaysia is...
I know you took your wife recently there, so please tell us.
Okay. there's actually quite a lot to do in Malaysia when it comes to shopping. First of all, Malaysia is the fourth best shopping destination in the world, the best in Southeast Asia. Four of the world's top 10 best shopping malls are in Malaysia, and all of them are situated in the Bukit Bintang area in Malaysia. Now, if you look at shopping, for example, the festivals and things, what you're looking at buying in Malaysia, compared to South African prices, normal prices, you pay half the price there. And when it comes to the sale periods like the Mega Sale Carnival, year-end sale and things like that, you're looking to pay up to 70% off, which is 70% off their prices, which I already mentioned is half the price. So I'll give you an example. I bought shoes a few times and things. What I ended up paying was 25% of what you'll find here in South Africa.
It's genuine. Like what was exposed here in South Africa, that when the specials come up, they put the price up and then they give you a discount on that.
Genuine prices. You'll see they will never cover up the original price. They will give you the price on that. And it's actually quite nice to see what type of shopping you can do. They have, we do have something called a place called Sogo in Kuala Lumpur itself. It's similar to your Edgar's, where you have all original branded stuff. Also, cheap, very, very, very cheap. You will not believe it. If you go there, you definitely will shop till you drop.
Now, just from a woman's perspective, give us some shopping centers that I think that should be a must for any listener that goes out there. Which shopping centers you think is that you should not stay away from?
Okay, we have the Suria KLCC, which is a prestigious Kuala Lumpur city center shopping mall. And, we find shoppers shopping there, and you can also go up to the top of the Petronas Twin Towers and enjoy the skywalk. We have the Bajaj Times Square, the Lot 10. So this is very centrally located within the Golden Triangle in Kuala Lumpur. And, you can use transportation. It's very easy, so you can use the monorails to easily take you around the shopping malls, and you can shop till late at night. So that is, exciting for tourists to actually enjoy the shopping malls in Malaysia. We also have the Star Hill Gallery. We have the Sungai Wang Plaza, Pavilion Kuala Lumpur. So there's a lot of shopping to be enjoyed in Malaysia.
Okay, we're already out of time. It's 10 o'clock already. Time has just flown past. We're broadcasting live from the Mall of Africa. If you want, you can come visit Tourism Malaysia. You can tell them you heard the program this morning. Come visit them here at the food court. And you can talk to the team, you can talk to Jamin. And this Singapore Airlines also here, you can talk to them. And it's a lovely atmosphere, alhamdulillah. Inshallah, let's see. Next week, I'm trying to get Tanzania, the ambassador of Tanzania on. If we do get that, inshallah, we'll try and get that sorted out. And we'll try and talk Tanzania next week, inshallah, if we can. We're already out of time. Inshallah, from myself, Muhammad Lambat, until next week, same place, same time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.